those costs were. And as you know, when you apply percentages, as you discussed earlier this morning, it depends upon what the base is. And so the higher the base, the higher the amount is relative to a percentage increase. And I can certainly go back and look at the Bachman report and summarize those. I also did a transcription of his testimony because he was so emphatic about how important the assumptions were underlying any kind of a decision that was made, and I'd be more than happy to make that available.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to get a grasp on this because we've just had two special sessions wrestling with the difference between 1 or 2% and 5 or 6%. And they sound small, but they can be earth-shattering.
A couple of other comments that I wanted to make on a slightly technical issue. The discussion related to copays and deductibles and how people were having a difficult time making their copays and deductibles associated with their mental health services. In the material that you received that outlined the state-by-state current status of mental health benefits, on page 12 relating to Oregon, in terms of the copays and coinsurance, those in Oregon statute already, they shall not be any greater than those for other illnesses. And so in those cases in which someone may now be paying a higher copay for their mental health services, my suspicion is that their coverage is not under the jurisdiction of the insurance code. And that's just a technical point that shows up on page 12 of the information that you received this morning. The other issue that I wanted to address is in the material that I've looked at over the years on the related to the discussion of mental health and the delivery of mental health services, when you look at it, the medical treatment, frankly, is only a small component of the services that are necessary for the chronically mentally ill. And I think it's important to understand that because when you have a person who is severely and chronically mentally ill, a number of the services that will help make that person functional in the on a day-to-day basis are services that are not typically covered by your health insurance plan, and the reason is that they're not medical services. The issues associated with housing and employment for people who are chronically mentally ill are significant. And so I think it's important to understand when you take a look at the issue, particularly surrounding those people, that oftentimes those services will not be paid for through your health insurance plan, which is appropriate since those aren't really medical services. That is not to diminish the fact that there needs to be coordination of mental health medical treatment with those other services, because those other kinds of elements are really what allows that person to function, find a job, keep a job, and that sort of thing. And there are interesting discussions in the literature about how difficult it is to achieve that sort of continuum of services in dealing with that special population. And those were really the key comments that I wanted to make, other than the fact that also to remind the task force that, as you did hear from Mylea Ray this morning, it is possible for large groups to negotiate different benefit designs. As it turns out in the case of PEB, when they looked at the cost consequences, they elected to only modify the benefits as opposed to adopting a full parity model.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Annette, you were speaking of the study that you were speaking about. Questioning was from Mr. Bachman or Mr. Bachman's report, and is that this mental health, is this the report you're talking about?
I don't believe so.
No.
The question, I'm wondering if that's the Price Waterhouse.
Correct.
Price Waterhouse?
Correct.
So you're disputing their conclusion that the increase is only 2.4% in the Oregon Medical Association?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, what I'm saying is when you look at the study and there are a variety of scenarios that are laid out in terms of what the cost consequence is. And depending upon which type of medical plan you have, you will have a different cost increase.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll proceed to Fad Beirutti. And we're happy that you could join us here, even if it was a little later than the scheduled time.
Thank you. We represent Beirutti Insurance. We are a local insurance agency. We are work primarily in the area of employee benefits with a small employer. We have over 200 employers that we help with their employee benefit plans. And, on my right is Jason, my son, who works with me. We are independent agents, and what we have here is some information which we'll pass out in a second, if that's permissible.
Certainly.
Showing actual
staff over there.
Keep one for you and I, Jace. These are two separate things, Nancy. Thank you. These are actual worksheets. Our main thrust today was to give you an idea of what's really happening with the small employer in terms of cost, in terms of benefits, in terms of what the employers are doing when faced with their insurance renewal, because that's when they have to make decisions as to how much of the premium they're going to pay, as to the plan design, and as to how much of the premium must the employees pay. So I'll wait a second until you get those there. We're not necessarily, against mental health parity or new benefits. We just want you to take in consideration that its costs must be kept in line somehow for these small employers, because they are really being squeezed. And the employees themselves have a very tough, it's very tough for them to pay their portion of the insurance premiums. Jace, if you want to interject any time, go ahead on this. Many employers, besides going to higher co-pays or higher deductibles on their health care plans, have actually dropped some benefits just to be able to afford the health care. We've had several other employers who were providing dental benefits say, this year we're not going to provide dental. The employees can pay for it all themselves on a voluntary basis just to be able to afford to pay for the medical. Or they may be changing their life insurance around, or dropping disability benefits, because every year we've had double-digit increases in the cost of health care. And you'll see on these sheets what the impact has been. I'll wait until they all get pet. Oh, it's okay to go ahead. Thank you. Take this sheet right here, what it says, Blue Cross Blue Shield at the top, for example. This is an actual small employer in Salem with 17 employees. And the top sheet shows what their medical rates were in 1996. We're working on their renewal, which is current, which is the second page. And in this particular case, if you look at the second page, LifeWise is the current carrier. It shows their old rates last year at 218 on a single, and they want to go to 242. We put the plan out to bid to all the carriers in the marketplace, and you can see just how expensive this is and how much it's gone up in the last, well, since 1996. What most employers have done in the past have said, we'll pay the single rate for our employees, which was the $218 figure, for example, which means the employees covering dependents would pay the difference. You'd subtract the $218, for example, from the $585, which is your employee, spouse, and children rate, which is like $360 a month, which is what an employee has been forced to pay for their family members. That's going up more, you can see, because the new family rate's $651. We put it out to bid, and everyone else is very, very expensive. So And this kind of gives you the idea of just how expensive it is, and by adding more cost to this, it's even tougher for the employer and the employee.
That's what I was going to add to what Fad had said earlier about whether or not we are for or against mental health parity. The discussions that we get hit with every day is what can we do about these rates and how expensive that they're getting, and on and on and on. I know that we were talking earlier about the number of mandates that are in the small group market, which is the majority of what we deal with. Depending on last time I heard, I want to say that somebody from Providence Health Plans told me it was like 48 mandates that are in the plan. And I think that the way I look at most of those mandates, whether good or bad, is that I'm not sure that any of them do anything. I think the main thing all of them do is they help increase the cost of the health insurance, whatever it is. Just by adding a mandate, the rates go up and up. And that's, I think, in addition to medical technology, which is part of why these rates are so much more expensive, I think that the mandate part of it is the employers don't really have a choice to find some plans. You can look across the board there and see the prices for this particular company and how expensive they've gotten.
The second handout that says 1996 at the top is another employer of 9 employees. You can see they were paying $146 a month on a salary. Now they want to go up to $297. It's gone up every year. And again, just an example of how we are all getting squeezed. The employers are getting squeezed. The employees are getting squeezed. It's very, very tough to meet these premiums. And then the single sheet by itself is an association plan made up of small employers, and you can see those rates are $300 on a single. And usually, again, most employers are paying the employee-only rate, which if you just look in the first column with the PPO plan, it's $308. Family rates, $894, you subtract those two, so it's $500 plus, which many employees just cannot afford to pay. So we just urge caution in doing anything that really pushes these up. It's tough enough to keep these in control right now. We're talking to our employees on a daily basis. We sit down and go through these renewals with them. We shop the marketplace, and these are the kind of problems we're having. We face a lot of frustrations from our employers for some kind of relief.
The other interesting thing that I would add about the mental health parity is when we go through these with employers, we get questions repeatedly about issues that they have with their employees. Prescription drugs is a big deal, all sorts of different items about what's covered and what's not covered. And that could answer this too. I've never once been asked anything about mental health, chemical dependency,
benefits. Very rarely when
benefits.
They ask us, what kind of mental health benefits do they have. It seems like the more concerns are about the prescription drug benefits, what kind of office call coverage do they have, that type of thing.
Yes, Representative.
I'm interested in your comment about dropping the dental insurance benefit, and I've don't want to get into your business, but I've counseled many people, drop your dental insurance, put $50 a month into the stock market, practice good personal hygiene, and 50 years from now, you'll have most of $105,000 left that you can pass on to your heirs. Why should you give the insurance company 15% of that?
That's an option that you have. Can people even afford to put away $50 sometimes a month when they have to pay $400 or $500 to pay for the medical benefits for their family?
So. Well, the other thing, too, is most of the employees look at that as the employer taking, the employees want something, they don't want to give something back to the employer, too.
And in a sense, if the employer does no longer pay for dental benefits, that's actually a reduction in benefits to the employee. Now, I don't mean to make the employers look bad, because many times employers are paying so much money on this, they have to do that just to afford the medical care. Employee benefits is probably the second biggest cost item to an employer next to their salaries. I mean, it's just huge. And they need some relief somehow, and that's always a tough question, you know how to do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the input. Appreciate the information here that you passed out.
You're very welcome.
This puts a lot of different face on things than just with 2% or 1% or that kind of thing.
Those are all double digits.
Arnie Spate, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations with Kaiser Permanente Northwest, and Mike Becker, Vice President, Public Policy and Community Affairs, Regents of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Oregon. Welcome, gentlemen. Don't fight too long over who goes first.
Mr. Chairman, it's been delegated that I go first. It's been a long day, and we're going to try to keep this brief because I know that our testimony stands between you and adjournment. And in Idaho, the bar is open. For the record, my name is Barney Spate with Kaiser Permanente. And our purpose in the agenda today is really to act as a kind of a preview of what you can expect to see at the next meeting or at the following meetings of the task force. Prior to this meeting and working with Mr. Berkobian, he convened a meeting of the major domestic carriers in Oregon to talk about the work of the task force over the interim and the kind of information that would be helpful to inform the debate. And so we met with Mr. Berkobian and that included representatives of Kaiser, ODS Health Plans, Premier LifeWise, Providence Health Plans, Pacific Care of Oregon, and Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. And what we tried to do in that discussion is to lay out a work plan that we thought was feasible for the industry to undertake on a voluntary basis, to try to come up with some standard definitions and some standard timelines so that what we portray to you, whether it be at a company-specific level or some of the information may be blinded to show not company name but what the industry variations are, to be able to give you the best snapshot with all of the warts that those kinds of snapshots will have, and we'll admit those, to try to see where are we in mental health coverage since the 1999 changes in the mental health mandate. And so what Mike Becker, my colleague from Regents, will do in a moment will be to lay out in very general terms some of the data work that we're doing on a collegial basis among six or seven competing carriers. Mr. Chairman, before we do that, though, I would like to ask your permission, and I'm assuming that the answer will be in the affirmative, that we will continue to work with Mr. Berkobian, folks from the insurance division, and others to answer as many questions that were raised today that we haven't already got on our list. I think we've all been taking some pretty good notes about both in the general terms and in specifics, and so we'll be working with your committee administrator and hope he'll work with us to try to be able to inform the next and the subsequent meeting of the task force on some of the complex issues that are raised today.
That's appreciated, and I'm sure he will.
Okay. With that, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Thank you, Barney. Again, for the record, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Before I get into my main testimony, I would like to clear up something about the Blue Cross Blue Shield system. I've heard a lot of discussion today about blue plans, and there's a lot of misconception out there about what blue plans are. First off, blue plans in different states are truly independent corporations. We are not all one big happy blue family that answers for other blue plans' insurance liabilities. There is a Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, and it's much like a franchise operation. They license the names and marks to use the cross and the shield and the names blue in different states, and there are fees that we pay to them, to that association, for that right. There are quality standards and financial standards we must meet to belong to that association. Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon is a member of the Regents Group. The Regents Group is a holding company that operates Blue plans in four states. In Washington, we operate a Shield-only plan. We do not have rights to use the Cross. That's a wholly different company, a competitor of ours, Primera Blue Cross, Blue Cross of Washington, Alaska. In Idaho, we have Shield-only rights, again, and there is a competitor, Blue Cross of Idaho, that is a wholly independent company. In Oregon and Utah, we have Cross and Shield rights, and we operate Blue Cross Blue Shield plans in those two states. So those four Blue plans within the Regents Group are affiliated entities. They are not one insurer, though. They are licensed separately in those four states. With that, I'll get into the main part of my testimony today. And again, as Barney indicated, a number of carriers got together to determine and identify what data is available, what can we identify, and how can we minimize the variables among the different plans to the extent possible, and ensure this committee that we are providing the best quality, the most credible and comparable data that we can get our hands on to help you with your deliberations. This whole issue was complex for a number of reasons, and I'd like to just touch on a few of those. The Oregon mandate, we need to keep in mind, is a 24-month period of a mandate, which is quite unlike anything we have on the physical health side. Everything on the physical side is dealt with in terms of typically 12 months of benefit. So we had that variable to account for. Secondly, the 1999 change that gave us the increase in the 25% applied to health plans renewing on or after July 1, 2000. So starting July 1, 2000, we see plans renewing or coming on board, and it took a full year for that 25% to even be implemented among the plans because of this renewal. And once those plans are all in after the first year, so that would have been July 1 of 2001, we now have all coverages under this additional 25% mandate. Now we have 2 years from the date that the coverage went into effect for that given plan until we can see, has anyone maxed out, or how many people have maxed out on their benefits as we go through that two-year period. So again, that was another factor we were dealing with. Also, as has been pointed out, groups can and do buy benefits above the minimum mandate. Now, again, that occurs in the large group market, the 50-plus groups, groups with 50-plus members, but there are those variables as well. Some groups in that large group market will buy benefits above the minimum mandate in Oregon.
But that doesn't happen in small groups at all?
It does not.
Is it available to the small groups if they wanted it?
I don't believe so.
So the Oregon definition of small groups, it is not available, 25 or under.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the small group market is defined as 2 to 50. And in that market, because of the way it is rated, the actuarial rating of that market, there is a standardization in the benefits that are provided. Now, I don't think a carrier would be prohibited from offering more than the minimum mandate. It's just my understanding that is not done. There are benefit differences among the plans and within the plans. Some plans are managed, other plans are not managed benefits. There is an interplay. We have to isolate the data among two general benefit categories. We have mental health on one hand, we have chemical dependency on the other hand. And then within each one of those two benefit categories, we have three different types of providers who can be accessed for delivery of that care. So likewise, within the mental health benefit, trying to get data on that, we have to look at inpatient delivery of services, outpatient delivery of services, and residential delivery of services. So those are the types of variables that we are trying to isolate and deal with as we gather these benefits. There are three basic areas, or four basic areas, where we are gathering this data. We are identifying the coverage amounts within each of these, each of the plans, each of the carriers, in these benefit categories, mental health and chemical dependency, and among these provider service levels, again, inpatient, outpatient, and residential. We are looking at, secondly, the utilization changes before and after the 25% increase in the benefits. And in so doing, again, we are dealing with the fact that it was a staggered implementation, and we are not 2 years away from full implementation. But again, we're trying to minimize those variables. Thirdly, we are identifying prescription drugs. We're getting some information on prescription drug benefits, the number of physical health drugs within the top 10 pharmacy benefits, and the number of drugs that are prescribed for mental health purposes within the top 10 prescribed drugs within each plan. We are gathering that information. And then finally, we're gathering some information on the individual health market. What types of benefits are different carriers offering out there in the individual health market? Our commitment through all of this is to come back to the committee with the best data that we can reasonably identify and present in a useful format, again, minimizing those variables among the plan. And we're going to do this. We've asked the plans to get back to us by May 1 so we can compile and aggregate this data and hopefully have it in usable form by May 15. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Mr. Spate.
Yes, Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have actually two questions. regarding the cost increases, I was thinking my question after the person leaves, so I probably should have addressed this to you, but the cost increases in the policies for employers, and I have to warn you, my husband's an insurance agent, so I get a lot of this at home. And I'm just, you know, I'm my parents work at a hospital too, so I'm always wondering. It was mentioned that these cost increases are due to mandates as well as increases or improvements in medical technology. I've never seen it broken down, though. Never seen exactly how much the mandates attribute to this cost increase and how much the improvements in medical technology do. I'm wondering if you have any
opinion. I don't have any hard data. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Fisher and Representative Worth. I don't have any hard data on that. Those are two of the variables, but there are also other variables as well. There is the cost variable for existing services. Those costs are rising as well. In addition to the cost of services, there is the number of services delivered. If you keep your cost at $1, but you delivered 100 units of that service, that's the same as increasing your cost to $100 for one unit of service. So those are all variables that go into the equation of what contributes to the rising cost of health care.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And then, we were speaking earlier quite a lot about the difference in 2.4 versus 0 to 10 or whatever, as the increasing cost estimate for providing mental health parity. And Ms. Annette explained that what it was about the Price Waterhouse study, how it was conducted, that she believed led to the difference in the 2.4% being, or their estimate being so much lower than the industry's estimate. So I'm wondering, so obviously we've been able to look at their methodology and their data. Have Price Waterhouse, Oregon Medical Association, NAMI, is the insurance industry our providers giving them your data and your methodology for them to look over and find out where possibly their assumptions are different than yours?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Worth, to my knowledge, that type of data sharing has not occurred.
Okay.
But I'm not an actuary either, so.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Worth, I think one of the issues that that I've got on my to-do list that I think we can provide you at the next meeting, along with the kind of information that that Mike has just described, would be at least a broad brush view of the cost drivers, and to try to put them in some percentage basis. How much is technology? And they'll probably be at the national level, because the analysis of particularly the broad cost drivers are better done at the national level. But we know technology is one. We know aging population is one. We know increasing utilization is another. And we know that general fee increases and the what they call the accelerator of medical costs above the CPI is a part of it. And we know that the role of government and mandates and other forms of administrative requirements. We'll try to get you something like that to break that pie down, so that if it's a 15 or 20% increase, how much are the major cost drivers?
I'd appreciate that.
I've seen something like that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just a quick response also, Representative Worth.
Plan. And we're going to do this. We've asked the plans to get back to us by May 1 so we can compile and aggregate this data and hopefully have it in usable form by May 15th. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Mr. Spate.
Yes, Representative Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have actually two questions. regarding the cost increases, I was thinking my question after the person leaves, so I probably should have addressed this to you, but the cost increases in the policies for employers, and I have to warn you, my husband's an insurance agent, so I get a lot of this at home, and I'm my parents work at a hospital too, so I'm always wondering. It was mentioned that these cost increases are due to mandates as well as increases or improvements in medical technology. I've never seen it broken down though. Never seen exactly how much the mandates attribute to this cost increase and how much the improvements in medical technology do. I'm wondering if you have any.
I don't have any hard data. I'm sorry, Senator Fisher and Representative Worth. I don't have any hard data on that. Those are two of the variables, but there are also other variables as well. There is the cost variable for existing services. Those costs are rising as well. In addition to the cost of services, there is the number of services delivered. If you keep your cost at $1, but you delivered 100 units of that service, that's the same as increasing your cost to $100 for one unit of service. So those are all variables that go into the equation of what contributes to the rising cost of health care.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And then, we were speaking early quite a lot about the difference in 2.4 versus 0 to 10 or whatever, and as the increasing cost estimate for providing mental health parity. And Ms. Annette explained that what it was about the Price Waterhouse study, how it was conducted, that she believed led to the difference in the 2.4% being, or their estimate being so much lower than the industry's estimate. So I'm wondering. So obviously, we've been able to look at their methodology and their data. Have Price Waterhouse, Oregon Medical Association, NAMI, has the insurance industry providers given them your data and your methodology for them to look over and find out where possibly their assumptions are different than yours?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Worth. To my knowledge, that type of data sharing has not occurred.
Okay.
But I'm not an actuary either, so.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Worth, I think one of the issues that that I've got on my to-do list that I think we can provide you at the next meeting, along with the kind of information that that Mike has just described, would be at least a broad brush view of the cost drivers and to try to put them in some percentage basis. How much is technology? They'll probably be at the national level because the analysis of particularly the broad cost drivers are better done at the national level. But we know technology is one. We know aging population is one. We know increasing utilization is another. And we know that general fee increases and the what they call the accelerator of medical costs above the CPI is a part of it. And we know that the role of government and mandates and other forms of administrative requirements. We'll try to get you something like that to break that pie down so that if it's a 15 or 20% increase, how much are the, in estimates, are the major cost drivers?
I'd appreciate it.
I've seen something like
that.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay.
Just a quick response also, Representative Worth. The second meeting of this task force is geared at healthcare cost trends, as Mr. Spate mentioned. Hopefully, and what we were somewhat depending on was that there was going to be a healthcare cost index study conducted in Oregon. It may or may not occur or may not occur in a timely manner for our second meeting, but if it does, we'll have better Oregon data. If not, we'll at least extrapolate what we can from perhaps national information. And then, again, hopefully the next portion of most of the next meeting will be just on the cost issues and some of those trends to answer a lot of these questions.
Great, thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, over the years, the issue of mandates arises periodically, and I would just say anecdotally, because I'm not bound to the same standards that witnesses are of accuracy, that I've heard 20-25% is the cost of the mandates.
Mr. Chairman, just to respond to Representative Hayden's comment, the periodic basis of the mandate issue, in my experience, has been biennial, generally in every odd-numbered year. And I can't respond to what the total cost is, but I would like to, in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, and my closing comment is kind of made on behalf of whom I think Mike and I really talk for, and others from the health insurance lobby. I mean, we're really here as proxies for our customers, which in large part are our employer groups, large group, small group, middle-sized group. And I heard some interesting comments today about cost shift and the burden that the public taxpayer pays for whatever shortcomings there may be in the group market. I think we can probably get together some information that it will at least portray some balance to this issue, because I just remind the committee, and I'll take special effort to remind Senator Hannan, that the employer community pays for any shortfall in reimbursement by the state. And Medicaid is the worst reimburser. If the state of Oregon would pay what Medicare pays, there are many providers in this state would be very happy, much happier than they are now. I would just note that any of that shortcoming is borne by the same employer groups that, whether it's a service mandate or some other kind of mandate, they bear that too. And I think we can bring some information to at least enrich the debate and perhaps balance the perspective of this dynamic tension that we have in American healthcare between the public sector and the private sector. Thank you.
One thing?
Yes.
I'm just curious, if you would, I'm very confused after hearing everything today, but the one thing I'd like to know, not tonight, today, is where there are any incentives in the mental health area in terms of the insurance industry that you get a lower premium because if the employee does certain things, those areas where they are providing parity are in the mental health area. Not the full medical area. For example, you know, my son just got his driver's license, and we made sure that he had the same driving school person in his life that my oldest son, the other son, Peter, has, and Adam's going to have the same one, my youngest one. And this is expensive, so he took six lessons, and we thought that was for peace of mind, but also we thought it had a lot to do with getting a lower insurance rate. And he just got it, and he is going to get a very low insurance rate compared to many of his peers. And I thought it was because he went to this specialized driving school. And that was a factor. But the reason he is because of his GPA. His GPA. So that the insurance industry has figured out that his 3.9 GPA and all the other things he's doing is such that they're going to give him a much lower rate. And what I find fascinating in this whole discussion is I wonder if, since we had somebody just touched on preventive medicine 100 years ago in this whole thing going on today, I'm curious to know, since everything's cost prevention, cost, if their group of employees, his company, Bill has struggled, small business are struggling, they've talked about struggling, where if the employees do certain things mental health-wise, and I'm not going to get into that world, I don't even understand it, there would be, actually, instead of mandating this discussion, we're not talking about mandates, we're talking about, obviously companies would be willing to get involved, because in the long run, to be very frank with you, it is going to have lower cost, if you understand what I'm saying.
We'll look into that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney. I will make this, and I'm responding as a layman to your issue, not as an actuary. I never got through basic math, really. There's a fundamental difference between health care and property and casualty insurance, and that's the issue of
you're gonna die.
That's part of it, but also the one differential in health insurance is that many of the services are elective in nature, whereas property accidents are truly oftentimes accidents. And they have correlated, for example, as you so aptly put, the GPA and the correlation of auto accidents among teenagers, there's an inverse correlation. But I will see, both in Oregon and in the nation, of are there either benefit designs or special programs that have been tried or that are on the blueprint to try to build in incentives about using mental health. And clearly some of the earlier witnesses on both sides of the issues, I think we've seen a dramatic change in the use of mental health, just in the social acceptability of both mental health and chemical dependency. Senator Hannon's comments about his treatment, my recovery, I'm 18 years into recovery, were things that in my dad's generation, who I know was an alcoholic, he would have never talked about. And we're in a different era, which I think makes those kinds of incentives much more possible. We'll see what we can find for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, one other factor in that issue is that for the small group market, we cannot help underwrite, if you will, for those types of issues. So that, you know, lifestyle or utilization is the ability in the small group market to underwrite for those things and change premium based on lifestyle and what have you is limited.
Yes.
Happy if State of Oregon reimburses the same as Medicare does. And why so?
Because the reimbursement on a unit cost basis, on a unit basis, when you compare Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial. And I'm going to give you some, these are hypotheticals that are pretty close to accurate. If Blue Cross Blue Shield pays $1 for a service, Medicare probably pays somewhere between 75 and 80 cents, and the state of Oregon pays somewhere between 45 cents and 55 cents for the same service. So, I mean, and I'm not even going to get into the issue of where's the cost, because in healthcare, after 25 years, I've determined that you'll have three interim committees going on that. But I'm just pointing out that the issue of cost shifting between the public and private is complex, and it has another point of view And if I were an employer, which is the point of view I was trying to make, and I do represent my employer as an employer, all employers pay a price for that in the health care coverage that they buy. And so that is a dynamic. That is a driver. Now, I'm not here to characterize it as a driver of the same magnitude that technology, an aging population, et cetera, is, but it is a driver. And so I just want to get that into the mix as we look at public and private mental health, public and private physical health. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We have no one signed up for public testimony. Is there anyone that does wish to give public testimony at this time? If not, thank you all for attending. Thank you for being patient in the audience, and thank the members of the committee for a long session here, and we're adjourned.